Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to our latest Empire Podcast interview special. Spike Lee is one of the greatest modern American filmmakers. School Days, She's Gotta Have It, Do the Right Thing, Malcolm X, He Got Game, 25th Hour, Inside Man, Black Klansman, Defy Bloods are just some of the Spike Lee joints we've been treated to over the last five decades. He's one of the most influential, innovative, and vital voices in cinema. But don't just take my word for it, take the word of the British Film Institute, the BFI, who bestowed their highest honour, the BFI Fellowship, upon Spike in February. That's when I was invited to have an audience with Spike Lee in a London hotel room, which is what you're about to hear now. But he wasn't just in London to receive the fellowship. He also visited the National Film Archive in Berkhamsted, just outside London, to learn more about the BFI's incredible work in film restoration and preservation. As part of that, a brand new remastered 4K print of Malcolm X has been created and will be making its debut as part of the BFI's Film on Film Festival, a four-day season which celebrates celluloid. It runs from June 8th to June 11th at the BFI South Bank in London. Tickets are on sale now at whatson.bfi.org.uk. And will feature all manner of special presentations, rare prints, exciting rediscoveries, 16mm and 35mm and nitrate prints, documentaries, special talks, and much, much more. And Malcolm X is going to be playing at the Film on Film Festival on June 10th at 4:20pm at the NFT One. It can't be any more precise than that. If you've never seen it or you've never seen it on the big screen, then you should strongly consider it, as chances are it will never have looked this good. And so because of Malcolm X's presence in the Film on Film Festival, it felt good and right and proper to spend the bulk of my time with Spike Lee on that movie and his memories of making it. But we also talked about other things, including his work as a teacher at NYU, Arsenal's ill-fated title challenge, which was then very much in the ascendancy, and much, much more. He's a great interview, playful, sharp as a tack, and not without an opinion or two, as anyone who's followed his career will know. I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Do please enjoy. We are delighted to be joined in the Empire Podcast by the great Spike Lee, who is here live in London. How are you, sir? You good?
Feeling great.
Good, good, good. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Congratulations on last night, the BFI Fellowship. How are you feeling?
Thank you very much.
How does it feel to be a BFI Fellow?
Well, you know, initially when I got the email, I didn't even know what a BFI Fellowship is, but yeah. Then I did more research and saw the illustrious members of this group, mm-hmm. these fellows, mm-hmm. and women too. Yeah. So yes. Last night was amazing. Clive Owen gave me the award, my brother. I think the audience enjoyed the clips from the various films. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow I give a master class. I'm a professor, tenured professor of film at the best film school in the world, NYU University, Film School.
Yeah.
So my plane lands Thursday at JFK. I go straight to class. I teach on Thursdays.
Wow. Okay. And will anything that's happened this week inform your class this week, or is it all planned out already?
I'll probably think about what I'll do somewhere over the pond. For those who don't know, that's the Atlantic Ocean.
You've got a packed all week as well, because you were just at the BFI National Archive in Berkhamsted this afternoon.
Yes, and tomorrow. I might respectfully say, Arsenal win rule will just top it off. The big match against Man City tomorrow. Yeah.
You're going to
the
Emirates?
Be sitting in the box.
Yeah.
Thank you. Shout out to Arsenal for putting me in the box. Been coming with a new Oswald Boateng suit.
Very nice.
I'm not messing around.
Very nice. Okay. Good, good, good. Listen, this podcast, Spike, is going to go out in April or May. So we'll know by this point, by the time it goes out, whether Arsenal have been successful in winning the league. But what do you think?
It's been a minute, though.
It has been a minute. 20 years.
a lot of people ask me, you know, since every time I come to England, I say, why Arsenal? I say, Thierry Henry. That's my guy. We're friends too. So.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I wish you all the best. I wish you all the best tomorrow night in your box. But it's also been, you're going back to NYU and you've been teaching there now, what, 30 years?
30 years.
30 years. So if my maths are correct, and they're usually not, this means you started teaching at NYU the year after Malcolm X came out.
Yeah, that's around there.
Okay. Can you talk me through the events that led to that?
Like my family, long line of educators. So yeah. It was just natural.
Yeah. Was it in any way a reaction to Malcolm X? Because I'm fascinated by how Malcolm X, the film, impacted your life.
To do with that.
Okay.
I mean, I graduated from NYU Graduate Film School. Ernest Dickus, who shot all my films up to Malcolm X, and Ang Lee, they're in my class.
Mm. Jim Jarmusch, 2 years ahead?
2 years ahead of me. To this day. We all say Jim Jarmusch is our hero because we weren't around when Martin Scorsese was there. We weren't around when Oliver Stone was there.
Yeah.
But I worked in the equipment room, so I checked out equipment at the gym. So this is somebody we knew. And when Stranger in Paradise hit, we all believed it was believable. And for She's Gonna Have It, I just followed. With the film festivals, all the way that film was marked, I just followed what my hero, Jim Jarmusch, did.
Yeah.
So he was very instrumental in me, you know, getting in.
So you've been doing this now for 30 years. You must have had some interesting talent come through your classroom in that time. Have you seen a Jarmusch? Have you seen an Ang Lee? Have you seen another Spike Lee?
Yeah. I mean, Chloe, who won the Oscar. She was a student of mine, Shaka, the Judas, the Black Panther film, a whole ton of people. And most recently, in Sundance, NYU killed it, you know, as far as awards go for films. AFI and USC were far behind.
Amazing. So I want to talk as well about another reason why you're here. You were at the National Archive today, which is issuing a new print of Malcolm X later on this year as part of the Film on Film Festival.
Yeah, I think June 9th to 10th, I think.
Okay, all right. And so were you keeping an eye on things, or have you seen the new print? Were you there to check up on them?
I have no worries about Malcolm X not being the finest print possible.
Mm-hmm.
Just touring BFI today. And so there, I have no worries. That print they're going to make is going to be pristine and sound great. I'm not worried at all.
I mean, it's coming off a pretty good negative, I'm guessing. You know, it looks pretty damn good.
Well, I don't know where they got it from, but I'm not worried.
Is film, shooting on film, is that important to you, or is that something that you're...
I mean, it a lot of this economics, you know. A lot of these studios won't give it extra money to, or streamers want to shoot film, especially if they know they're never going to be screened in the theater. It's just going to be, you know...
They see it as a waste, almost.
TV. So, you know, they're always trying to cut corners, but I would like to shoot film. It's been a while since I've done a film that wasn't shot, you know, digitally.
Mm. Something to go back to, perhaps.
Oh, yeah. Get the budget for it.
When was the last time you shot in film?
Might have been Summer Sam.
Wow. That's 1999, isn't it?
I have to look, but maybe it's not that far, but that's just for the Ellen Kuras, great DP.
Yeah.
We did a lot of mixing of the stocks and stuff like that for that film.
Well, Malcolm X is going to look incredible. And I'm fascinated by that movie. It's obviously a tremendous movie.
Thank you.
I'm fascinated by where you were at the time that that movie was made and where you were in your headspace after mm-hmm. it came out as well. I was looking at the date that you started filming. So I believe it was Sunday, September 15th, 1991.
We began shooting on a Sunday?
Apparently so.
Why?
Apparently so. God knows.
I don't remember ever shooting on a Sunday.
Well, it was in the making of documentary. So.
Oh, I know why.
Okay. Why is that?
We had to close the street.
Of course.
That was the opening scene where we have a crane and we have a subway go by. We crane down. Then the Steadicam operator, the great Ted Churchill, bless his soul, stepped off the crane, walked in, and I was getting my, as a character, short, I was getting my shoes shined. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why. You're right. I remember. Sunday was the only day we could close that, from permission from New York City, we closed that street.
Wow. That took you quite a long time to get that shot right, I believe. Is that correct?
Oh, it's very intricate. I don't know how many, we had cars, you had the subway, extras. I mean, it was, but that was planned like that because we wanted the audience to know that this is a big film from the jump.
Mm-hmm.
And Ernst Dickerson, as I said before, who shot all my films at NYU and Malcolm X, the last film he shot for me, we studied the films, at big films with David Lean, Dr. Zhivago, Bridge River Kwai, and Lawrence Arabian. And what happened was before, while we were in pre-production, Columbia Pictures re-released a new version of, new mix in print of Lawrence Arabian.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to see this in the Ziegfeld Theater in New York, which was the best theater in New York City. It's no longer there, but that was really helped us a lot because we wanted this film to be big.
You wanted to have that scope from the
big
off. yeah
I mean, look at the films I just named: Dr. Zhivago, Lawrence Arabian, Bridge River Kwai.
Yeah.
And today at the BFI we saw the actual drawings for the bridge.
Wow.
For Bridge River Kwai.
Wow.
And the thing it makes about that film is that there was no thing called a CG. So they had one take for that. When that train goes to the bridge, they blow up the bridge, the train goes into the river. They had one take. So I always think about how many cameras they had going.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's one take.
Yeah.
They had the
can't
bridge
reset.
Blows up. There's and no reset. The train goes into the river.
Did you have elements of that on your early films as well, where you don't have those CG assists? I mean, Malcolm X is made in the early 90s and CG was in its infancy at the time. I imagine now you would shoot that shot on a Monday because you'd be able to, you know, do it on a back lot with loads of green screen and it'd all be good.
No. the way we did was the way
it's the right way to go.
Yes.
It's the right way to go.
We did the way it should have been done right then.
So the reason I was asking about the opening shot and shooting it on a Sunday was Jungle Fever came out about a week and a half before you started filming on Malcolm X. The year before is Mo Better Blues. The year before that is Do the Right Thing. I mean, that's a pretty astonishing burst of creativity. So at what point did Malcolm X enter your headspace?
I mean, that's one of the most important books I read in junior high school. So I became a student of Malcolm before I decided I wanted to be a filmmaker. So that was not something just thrown up at the last minute.
Mm. But the film itself, the opportunity to make the film, is something that came up.
I mean, as I said before, I read the book. All autobiography of Malcolm X was told to Alex Haley. So that's the most, that book has been, even today, I read it once a year. So it was in my brain, in my soul, way before I decided I want to be a filmmaker. And Marvin Worth, the producer, he'd been trying to get that film made for decades. Many people, the star in it, Richard Pryor one time was going to be Malcolm X, and various scriptwriters.
Mm-hmm.
And then Norman, it was announced that Norman Jewison was going to do it. And I said a couple statements.
You, Spike?
I don't believe it. And I have, to, even today, anytime I can, you know, we talk about Malcolm X, I give my respect to Norman Jewison because he had the job.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have to step aside. So I want to thank Mr. Jewison again. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Did you speak directly to him at any point?
Yeah, we had a Marvin arranged for us to speak.
Can you reveal what was said, or was that very much a private conversation?
Between Norman and I,
mm-hmm.
we just had a discussion, you know, and he gracefully stepped aside.
Mm-hmm.
So when that happens, there's an existing screenplay already. Did you start? Was it a page one rewrite for you?
Yes.
In if I'm right in thinking, longhand?
Yes.
I love.
I don't type.
You should try it, Spike. It's incredibly freeing.
Not the way my brain works. I got to have pen, mum block pen in hand.
Yeah. Purple ink. Is that correct?
Purple ink.
Okay. Okay.
And I could afford a mobile block back then. That was a big pen. D-I-C.
So where did you start? Because you've read, as you say, you read the book every single year. So had you got the movie in your head when you sat down to write?
Yes. Even before I started to write, I mean, the script was there. There were several scripts that had been written over the years. But I just had a, you know, intense research. All the documentary films, newsreel footage, books about Malcolm. So it's just like any film I do, I try and get it, do as much research as I can, that's available to me.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you see through all that to get it on the page?
Well, I write stuff down on a 5x7 index card.
Yeah.
And just file it and then I have enough stuff I put in the order of the script. So sort of like sort of serves as an outline, but it's on index cards.
Mm.
Because it feels like it was an opportunity that here's the train, get on the train, history's calling, this is your chance. It felt very much like that from the outside.
Well, it was definitely a calling. I mean, that was, you know, everybody was locked in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was on the same page and we all knew the importance of this film. And besides that, I can go anywhere where black people wouldn't tell me, Spike, don't fuck up Malcolm X. So I didn't need a reminder. I was being told every day.
So you knew. But you must have said that to yourself in a weird way.
I was confident in myself.
So, yeah.
I mean, if I thought that one, I wouldn't have my neck on the line.
Mm. Because, yeah. Because it's such a stylish, striking film visually as well.
Ernest Dickerson.
But
production designer, Wynn Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Costume designer,
Oscar winning, yeah.
Ruth Carter, who's been nominated again for a second time for Black Clans, for Wakanda.
I mean, it's a hell of a team.
I mean, that was for many years. Started in with school days.
But where does that translate? I mean, we talked a little bit earlier on about, you know, the incredible alumni that you were with at NYU.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've said in the past that one of the secrets for anyone trying to get into film directing is to bust your ass. Just work really, really hard.
Well, I think they hear say bust your arse.
They do. We don't say ass. Bust your bottom, Spike, is what we'll say over here.
That too.
You could bust that your too. Bottom. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm going to say it. You also need, you know, some talent, a degree of talent as well to stand out from the crowd.
A lot of people who work don't have talent, so I don't know if I want to make that up.
I feel seen, Spike. I feel very, very seen right now. But, you know, there is such clarity of vision in Malcolm X. Everything is working beautifully in tandem. Where did that surety come from for you? Where did the confidence to make shot choices like the opening shot of the film or the opening
when
the opening
flag,
images, we say the burning flag,
and
absolutely.
The cut with the meeting of Rodney King.
Uh-huh.
Just inspiration, knowing how important this film is. That's where it all came from.
Mm. And having Denzel must have helped as well.
I was going to say that. I mean, he was the glue. I mean, I talked about that last night at the award ceremony. And that performance is never going to get old, what Denzel did. When you see the commitment, you know, as I said last night, that he's playing various stages of the evolution of Malcolm.
Mm. Certain biopics lately have been accused of perhaps being hagiographies or perhaps sanding off the rough edges of their subjects. And that's certainly something that can't be leveled at Malcolm X. And that feels to me that's something that
were criminal acts. I mean, we're not trying to say that he was never in jail, never in a penitentiary,
mm-hmm.
never just drugs. Was also a pimp too, you know. That's, he put that in the book and on autobiography, so I can't leave that out. He told that to Alex Haley himself.
You're circling that when you're reading it, going, okay, that's there's a scene, there's two scenes. Nowadays, though, when you read the book, that's a fascinating, you know, revelation that you read the book every year. Do you get something new from it each time? Do you get something? Do you read something and go, oh,
I mean,
I could have put that in.
I'll give an analogy. I mean, a great film. I mean, there are great films. I know that this might have happened to you where you've seen this film numerous times and then you watch it again and you see something you didn't see before. So mm-hmm. I think that's the same thing with literature, too.
Anything spring to mind from recent mm-hmm. readings of the book? Anything that stands out for you?
What stands out is that, you know, black and brown people still oppressed, and it's something that he gave his life for.
In fact, I wanted to ask about that, the shooting, the assassination scene.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that sticks in your mind? Because it's such a powerful sequence.
Well, we say that to the last.
Yeah.
Because we knew everybody dreaded the shoot that scene. We, no pun intended. And I just felt strategically we say that for the last, because the esprit de corps of the cast, the crew was sky high, but like one of those Wall Street graphs, every day, you know. We're moving down, and then the week before, you could physically tell, you know, people they know it's their job, but they knew that was gonna be a rough 3 or 4 days shooting assassination
mm.
of Malcolm X.
And was it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Again, no wordplay by me saying shooting assassination. No, let's say filming, because that was
filming it. Yeah. You are someone who knows how to end movies, and
well, that's debatable. A lot of people. I'm glad you like ends of my film. A lot of people have expressed different viewpoints.
You know, whether it's 25th Hour, Brian Cox's incredible monologue in that, or you know the.
You know what's funny about that?
Yeah,
we kept shooting. We had to keep giving Brian Cox more stuff to say because we had all this footage. But Brian, his voice too.
Yeah. It's amazing.
He's Scottish, right?
He is, yeah. Not that you could tell from that movie.
He lives in Brooklyn. He lives in the neighborhood next to me.
Really?
Great guy.
Has he been? Do you still do the block party every year?
Well, we haven't done it since the pandemic.
Oh man, okay. This year, maybe. Do you think?
We'll see. You know how this.
Yes.
People are still getting sick. You know.
Yeah, it hasn't gone away.
It's not gone away.
There's a phrase people keep saying. during the pandemic or post-pandemic. It's like we're still in the pandemic right now. Mm-hmm. But hopefully you could do a log party again. And hopefully Brian Cox can go along. That'd be amazing. Because I love the ending of that movie. But I was just thinking about the ending of Malcolm X, because it's obviously hugely impactful. But I can think of few greater flexes by a filmmaker than the end of Malcolm X, where you introduce Nelson Mandela at the end.
His only film. Amazing. And now let me tell you, I'll get a quick story.
Yeah.
We did Malcolm X and Warner Brothers. And when they saw the great Nelson Mandela, they were like perplexed. Why is Nelson Mandela in this film? I had to educate him. Nelson Mandela was in prison for 27 years. And he said that autobiography, Malcolm X, kept him alive. Mm-hmm. And that's why Nelson Mandela was at the end of that movie and end of Malcolm X.
That's amazing.
Another story. So at the end, he's saying word for word Malcolm's speech, by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. But when he was reading the script, he said, "Spike, I can't say by any means necessary." And I knew why. Mm-hmm. Because he was planning to run for president.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
And the Afrikaners will use that clip against him. And to say that when Nelson Mandela is saying, "By any means necessary," it means that we will kill you. I said, "No problem," because I knew I had the archival footage of Malcolm saying that. So that's why.
That's why you got to that. Film,
you hear Malcolm X saying, "By any means necessary," and not Nelson Mandela.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
True story.
True story. I presume that was shot towards the end.
Soweto.
Yeah.
That was our last. After the holidays, we went to Egypt, where we had the stuff, the Nile River, the Sphinx. Denzel was on the camels, the pyramids, mm-hmm. And then we flew to. We were supposed to fly directly from Cairo to Johannesburg. But we had to make a detour and land in Nairobi because we got a bomb threat.
Shit.
So we had to, while we were in the air.
Wow.
They didn't tell us. We just, so we had to land in Nairobi.
Wow.
And then we, they checked the plane. We had a big welcome party for us. But we got there like 6 hours later, but it was gone.
They were like, "We're going home." Yeah. Wow.
Bomb threat.
Specifically against the production, or?
They knew we were on the plane.
Jesus. Was that something that happened quite a lot? Because I imagine.
Jungle Fever had a death threat.
Wow.
When we shot in this Italian American neighborhood.
Jesus. Spike. Well, I'm glad you're still here.
Yeah, let me show you. In fact, I just somebody went down in the basement and pulled up the newspaper from that day, and just got a frame, and I put it on my Instagram, but I'll show it to you right now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The title is The Daily News, Spike, Police Guard Spike Lee.
Cops Guard Spike Lee, flashback to Jungle Fever, filmed in the fall of 1990. I got death threats too, and that's the bodyguard's truth.
read the headline.
Cops Guard Spike Lee, Brooklyn filming sparks racial threat. And then there's another one that says, Guarding Spike, his new movie, Sparks Threat. And if I could zoom in, I could read a little bit more as well. And that's on Jungle Fever.
Yes.
Wow. And just to wrap up, have you reread the autobiography of Malcolm X this year? Are you scheduling that in?
It's only February. It's only February.
This is going out.
Are
in
you
April
trying now. To say because it's Black History Month, I have to read the autobiography of Malcolm X as told Alex Haley?
Is that what you're trying to say?
You're putting words in my mouth, Spike. You're putting words in my mouth.
I'm just asking.
I'm just saying. I'm fascinated.
I'm just asking. You know, I don't know if that's required reading during Black History Month. I mean, which I might add, the shortest month of the year, too.
Yes. Yep. That's very, very pointed indeed. Well, I'm going to let you go. But Spike, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much indeed.
Well, thank you very much. And keep doing your thing.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. Get a mic stand, all right?
Next time. I've been watching it. It's been just drooping the entire time for the interview, but it's all fine. It's been an absolute pleasure.
All right, bye-bye.
Cheers, Spike.
See ya.
Okay, that was Spike Lee. Thanks to him for his perseverance and stoicism in the face of a microphone stand that just did not cooperate. And thanks to Jill and Liz at the BFI for making this happen. Once again, the Film on Film Festival is on at the BFI South Bank from June 8th until June 11th. Malcolm X plays on June 10th and is essential for any fans or friends of film. Go to whatson.bfi.org.uk for more info and to book tickets. Right, that's enough for me. Thank you so much for listening as ever. See you next time. Bye-bye.